We all need a little bit more. We all need a little bit more. The saints and the liars, the dealers and buyers. We all need a little bit more. We all need a little bit more. Somewhere there. Richard Roth with The Passage. That was The Heydays with New Religion, a four-piece band whose lead singer and songwriter is the son of my guest this month, Rick Finkelstein. Rick is currently showing his drawings, photographs, sculptures, and constructions at BCB Art. After the interview, Contacta 1-4 by Karlheinz Stockhausen. This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WJXC, and my guest is Rick Finkelstein, an artist who currently has a show at BCB Art in Hudson. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you.
I always ask people, how did you end up coming to Hudson?
Well, a number of years ago, I was introduced to Bruce by an art dealer, mutual acquaintance by the name of Jeffrey Hoffeld. And he introduced me to Bruce, and over the years I had a piece or two in some group shows, and then we had talked about doing a show this summer, possibly with my brother-in-law, Michael Lindsay Hogg, who had a little house in Hudson. We now have a house in Great Barrington, so we're nearby, but we come often, and Bruce and I thought about the idea of my doing a solo show here. And we sort of talked about what it should be. I happen to be represented in New York by another gallery by the name of Robert Mann, which is a photography gallery, where I exclusively show photographs, sort of large format photographs that are taken from very small dioramas, sort of narrative scenes. And the way this came about was, well, I was at one point a lawyer, and I left the law. I had always drawn, and I was interested in drawing, and over the years I moved into a studio and started to do large charcoal drawings, which I first showed in a gallery in New York, and then I taught myself to paint, and I then started to show paintings, and at some point I was always interested in storytelling, and so at some point I built two small, very flimsy models, which I photographed and sort of blew up and put on the wall of my studio. And my painting dealer saw them and called Robert Mann, who then came to the studio and said, I'd like to represent you as a photographer, which I really wasn't. But so I've had this relationship with Robert. But I asked Bruce if it was possible to do other kinds of work here. And he thankfully and graciously said yes. So that's how I ended up with this show.
Which consists of, among other things, a lot of small male figures.
Yes. Well, I had used in these dioramas generally sort of small, very small figures, you know, half an inch tall, smaller, that I had found on the internet. There's a whole world of model train makers, and you can find thousands of these things. You could find nuns and nudes and Nazis and President Obama. And I used those, and I built these sets around them. And I was not a sculptor, but I was sort of interested in sort of these figures, and I just for the heck of it got some self-hardening clay and fashioned a few of these figures. Initially the man looking up, and then somebody showed me how to cast them, and then I began to do multiples in resin. And I like the sense of these groups of people, particularly these men, sort of looking up at whatever it was that was in the sky. And people have all different kinds of associations to them, which I find interesting. So that was sort of how they initially came about.
And so you're making a mold from this, the clay.
The clay, just the silicone mold, and then resin is poured in. You know, so I can make many, many of these things from a single mold, as you know, you can see with that cast of 32. That's, and I thought about even doing more of them, like those Chinese
soldiers.
Soldiers of sort of an entire floor of these. And I'd once seen an exhibit many, many years ago in Soho, I mean decades ago, of, I think his name was Doha So, an artist, and he actually had done thousands of very small figures, I guess holding their hands up under this plexiglass through the gallery. You basically walked.
Well, no, I think they have that at the Hessel Museum at Bard.
Oh.
When you first walk in, it's about 8 by 12 feet or something.
That must be it, yes. It's a unique piece. So all of those things were just of interest and influences. I had just been interested in, well, I'm sort of I'm interested in books and I'm interested in reading, and I, what usually happens is that I have, you know, my studio is sort of half painting and drawing studio and sort of half toy store. So though I collect things and people give me things and I kind of walk around, and I had at some point gotten this large sort of old glass case and wasn't quite sure what went in there. And then I don't know where or when I had maybe seen a small model of a library, or I had wanted to take a photograph actually of a small library. And so then I sort of downloaded images of these books, and I created spines, generally using the typeface of the book itself, whether, you know, the Ulysses, there were certain very recognizable typefaces. And then I then playfully made up a whole series of other titles, which I inserted into the library. So it was both sort of you know, I mean, I like this play on words. I don't use words in the work, but I've always thought about it. And this was just a chance to do that. It doesn't have, I mean, many of the other work have references to other artworks. This, at least to me, it didn't. Just
no, it must have taken quite a lot of time.
It did. I'm not generally compulsive or meticulous, which is the sort of funny part of it. But I heard some artist in an interview who was a painter, but he did other things. But he said, you know, I grew up and I always thought of myself as a maker. You know, and I kind of think of myself as a maker, that these things are sort of, you know, media through which to, you know, the photography is something I use to make things. I love drawing. That's my first love. But then I guess I love making things in whatever materials I find, however sort of flimsy or transitory. But I like the idea of making, even if it's not perfect. Or when I first made some of these things, I was, one of the themes that sort of at least runs through some of this and a lot of the other work is voyeurism. I mean, people love to look in. And I'd made a series of very small boxes that were probably sort of four inch cubes. And they all had these lenses, as this one does. And they had these intricate sort of lighting systems that were, you know, there was a circuit board in the bottom. They became sort of the wires would break and the lights would break. And then I thought, you know, I'd seen an exhibit at the International Center of Photography by, I think, a Romanian artist who I'm blanking on the last name, who did these made cameras and had these small self-made cameras, which I just love. They could have been out of wood and cardboard and other things, or he modified them. And I thought, I kind of love the object. So I'd made a number of these. There's one in the show, and I put this scene inside. But I like the idea of making my own cameras. And I then just like the idea of having a peep show of sorts.
And so you sort of invent a story.
I invent a story. So there is, I gave Bruce another one, I don't think it's up right now, which was sort of a replica of the Duchamp installation in the Philadelphia Museum, Etant Donné. And this one has these wooden doors, and you can peep through, and there's a nude woman sort of lying, coming out of the bushes, similar to the, not as intricate, but, you know, so that was another kind of influence. I mean, people, if you have peoples, people necessarily want to look at them. If there are 50 in a gallery, they'll look through all 50. There's a natural impulse to. So that was also of interest. So I had done a number of those. And we'll probably do more. And people are also drawn to these issues of scale, because scale, in some ways, depending on what it is a bit uncanny to see sort of realistic scenes that are of a different size or scale or scope.
And that was something you've been doing for how long?
I've been doing these small models probably for 5 or 6 years.
Did you retire from law completely?
I pretty much retired from law. I kind of say I left the law, because I don't like to think of this in any way as retirement. I'm sort of one of many lapsed lawyers who left the profession. I mean, I had an interesting legal career. I was a criminal lawyer and a public defender, and then I taught criminal law and was the director of the criminal law clinic at NYU Law School, and had a varied law career, and was always interested in the stories that clients told. Narrative always sort of pushed this. But I had really wanted to draw, and over the course of several years, I was able, luckily, to make that transition.
And this was something you did as a child, probably.
I drew, yeah. I never had any formal training, but I always drew. And even when I was in the courtroom, I used to draw on the subway on the way to court, and when I could sketch in the courtroom. So, I have one sort of sketch of a woman here that was one of the drawings I just did on the subway. And the subway was kind of like a drawing class, because in a drawing class, they'll usually have a one-minute pose and a five-minute pose and then an hour-long pose. And when you're on the subway, you don't know if somebody will be sitting there for one stop or five stops or 10 stops. So you don't know if you're going to get a one-minute drawing or a five-minute drawing or a 20-minute drawing. So it was always a very interesting place to sketch.
Would that be something that people would notice?
Well, the interesting thing was, on the New York subway, you didn't necessarily want to make eye contact. So I would try to be in a not terribly crowded car, and I would be sort of in one corner or pocket of it, and I would find somebody across. Occasionally, somebody would notice. And the reaction always was great interest and delight. And they loved being drawn. Whenever somebody saw me draw, I would always give them the drawing. So it happened occasionally, but I always got sort of when people understood what I was doing, they were always kind of delighted with it.
Now, you still do photography with this gallery in New York?
I still do photography with the gallery in New York.
And that's primarily photographs of construction?
They're all photographs of constructions. I mean, I'm not a landscape photographer, and I'm not a street photographer, and in some ways, I don't fully consider myself a photographer. It seems to be a medium through which I can do these other things. I mean, I see people who've been lifelong photographers or the great photographers, and they bring something else, I feel, to the work. But yes, I mean, I do show as a photographer. I mean, I recently had a show probably a year and a half ago at the gallery, which was all about the cinema. They were all, because I was interested in the sort of the narrative on the screen and the narrative in the audience. So with the help of a young art student, we built a 400-seat perfect replica of a theater. The art student did more of the obsessional velvet seat work, and it showed real films and sconces And so a number of the shots were taken in there, but then there were other scenes that were taken outside. There was a drive-in theater. There was a sort of home movie where a family's sitting around watching a Super 8 film. But the entire show was around this idea. It was called Sitting in the Dark with Strangers. But when I do a show there, I'm always looking for an idea, a theme. And I do this because this is what is unique to the work. You know, because if I came in with landscape photographs or street photography, I would sort of be among a group of photographers with whom I feel I couldn't compete. There are a number of people who do these miniature sets. There are a number of really terrific photographers. James Cassapiri, there's one by the name of Lori Nix. All of their sets, however, are devoid of people. They're much more about the space. The spaces are extremely evocative. They're empty spaces. The light, some are post-apocalyptic and empty. But I was much more interested in people in the spaces and telling stories that were about people. So, you know, there are other people that do this, but, you know, fewer than do the other setups.
What kind of equipment do you use camera-wise?
Well, I use a Canon 5D Mark II. I don't, you know, I have to also say I don't know much about photography. I'm fairly limited, but I think the first photographs I took were with a small little Canon point-and-shoot Elf and blew them up. And the fact that they were slightly out of focus actually sort of gave them a much more sort of realistic sense because, you know, the scenes actually, when at first blush, look real. They're very hard to tell that they're. And you know, I think my ineptitude sort of forced me to, you know, to sort of work around and create other solutions. People don't make lighting for tiny models. You have to sort of find flashlights and little push lights and other things. That so I was sort of forced to figure these things out. I mean, I love problem solving, and this required a lot of problem solving. I do some Photoshopping. I've learned to do some rudimentary Photoshopping. And to be honest, I'm more interested in the final image than I am necessarily in the process. I'm not a purist in terms of the process at all. And sometimes I'll take 1,000 shots of one little model and one of them will work. And I can never get the same one. I really don't. And it really is total chance that I get the shot that I want. With them, I actually brought, in this case, the models. When I show them in the gallery in New York, we don't show any of the models. He doesn't want, in some sense, to either destroy the illusion or have them compete. But I think that people also are interested in seeing this and fascinated by it. So there is, there's one small model of a baseball player. There's a more intricate model of women sort of bathing under a waterfall, nude women with their Volkswagen van, which then I shot as a large photograph. And there is a smaller model of an artist's studio. It's my recreation of the studio of Giorgio Morandi, who was an Italian painter who I believe lived with his mother and was sort of a painter's painter. And he essentially, other than some few very beautiful landscapes, he essentially painted these clay or ceramic jars and vases. They were lined up together, and it was more about the volume and the space and somewhat about the color. So this is a sort of recreation of what I believe that studio might have looked like. And the photograph is a photograph looking through the door and windows of this studio. And generally what I do is I make a sort of black cardboard box with a hole on the top, and I stick in a push light. On these early ones, that's what I did just to get a little more dramatic light on it. I've learned since to use some other kind of scaffolding to sort of have this more dramatic light. But I'm also, in the later one, particularly in this last show, interested in lighting much more than I was in the earlier pieces.
And so these are like small LED lights?
They're small LED lights. They're small sort of powerful flashlights. They, a string of Christmas lights, anything that I can find that, you know, when I see these things, I just buy a flashlight or an LED, whatever it is, and I see if they'll work. They're, you know, some are yellow lights, some are, you know, the LED whiter lights. You know, none of them are sort of store-bought lights that are designed to shoot models. They're basically whatever I can find.
And do you save all the models?
No. I save some of the models. I mean, some of them are literally sort of paper that I print on and, you know, glue together and are really just, you know, incredibly flimsy. Some of them, you know, I put on a desk and I sprinkle some grass, you know, fake grass and glue some trees down. And glue some trees down and put some figures so they're not even inside an enclosure. I mean, the first one I did was a series of nuns that actually looked like they were in a large cathedral, but it was simply some pop-up card that I saw that expanded and was, you know, it looked like some sort of interior space. But so many of them are just fairly jerry-rigged, and they're just done for the sake of a photograph. Others that I think are somewhat more interesting or that somebody would like to look at or be fascinated by, I'll try to save. I clearly enjoy working in many different media. And one of the nice things was that Bruce sort of gave me the opportunity to do this kind of show. When we first talked about a title, the title I had was from some Samuel Beckett interview where he talked about the accommodation of mess is the task of the artist. And I thought, well, what I do a lot is I accommodate the mess that's in my studio. and it sort of comes out to, so one day I decide to build cardboard houses, and then I once sort of built a giant landscape using paper mache and plaster cloth of these snow-covered mountains because I thought it was interesting. It turned out that after working on it for a month, it did not, I mean, a lot of these projects turn out to not be interesting because I don't really plan them in advance. I just end up doing them. So I got interested in making these sculptures and pursued that. And then I had a series of houses. Then I thought about taking photographs. So I went out and I took landscape photographs around the area. And I then inserted the houses, the cardboard houses, to sort of change both the context of the house and the context of the landscape.
So you're using the landscape as the background.
As the background. And I try to drop them in so that they actually look as if they are actually situated in the landscapes. And so he allowed me to put in some drawings and to put in a painting and the models and then this whole series of landscape and sort of architectural prints. Because they're all based on photographs that I've taken or I found that I sort of ended up trying to sort of flatten them out and abstract them. So they're sort of colorful and in a way accessible, which I like. But I also like the idea of multiples, doing these things in a grid. I think for whatever reason, there are certain things people are drawn to. They're drawn to peepholes, they're drawn to multiples, there are certain things that seem to be intrinsic to one's interest.
How are you actually making those landscapes?
They're all done on a computer. I take a photograph, which I begin with, and then I begin to sometimes flatten it. I begin to sort of paint on it and color these shapes in, changing the landscape sometimes, simplifying it. And while they don't come out necessarily. I mean, they look representational. The architectural ones look a bit more abstract, and some of them sort of, you know, are on the line between these colorful abstractions and more representational pieces. And some of them take a little while. Some of them take many, many hours in sort of composing them and looking at them and thinking about the colors and, you know, how the colors work together and the perspective, so that they're quite fun to do. I first worked with these computer things when I did these first photographs. And then somebody came in and some photographer actually came in and sort of just gave me a quickie course in Photoshop, which I'm still not very good at. I don't know how to use levels. I don't know how to use the sort of some of which are basic tools. But I know enough to be able to do these things and sort of, you know, tweak photographs and these prints enough to come out with the effect that I'm looking for. So I'm kind of, in this stuff, I am a little bit of a jack of all trades, but a master of none.
Well, it gives you the freedom.
Yes. It gives me the freedom and somehow it's not having a mastery, but I come to a point where I feel somewhat in control of the medium, and I'm happy with that. I don't feel I need to pursue it, but I can use that in different ways. And then I sometimes get restless, and, you know, I'm working on three or four different things at a time, a drawing, a painting, some models, some photographs, some little sculptures.
Now, is your studio in the same place where you live?
No. I have always had, I could never work at home. I mean, I always want to leave home and keep certain banker's hours. You know, I mean, I like to get there in the morning and I work there all day. Sometimes I bring my dog. I used to have a studio down in Tribeca. Then that space was sold. It was a warehouse sold to become condominiums. And then I moved up to Soho and I had a space with some architects and then they had to expand and threw me out, and then I found a space, you know, near my house in the Upper West Side in the one building that used to be a studio building. So it's kind of this amazing place which nobody has ever seen. I mean, most people come in and they're quite amazed, and there are they're, you know, ground floor stores, but above it there are many, many painter studios. There's a violin maker, there's a woodworker, there's an architect and a film company. I don't have a top floor studio. The top floor studios all have skylights, and the front studios have, you know, sort of huge ceilings where they apparently had the early drawing classes in there. So it's a great building. One hopes that, like the other buildings, it's not going to be torn down in a few years, but it probably will.
A remnant of the West Side's bohemian past.
Right. But quickly fading. It's just canyons of, you know, tall condominiums now.
And you say you have a place in Great Barrington?
Yes. We just recently, a couple of years ago, came up and rented a little house for a couple of years and found a community, both of people we'd known from the city, but we live in this area behind the town called The Hill, and we just met a whole group of local people, you know, full-time people, many in the arts. And so we sort of developed a, you know, this community that we see. I mean, old friends and then these new friends who we've met. So it's a very interesting place for us. We come up all year. And because we're in a town, it doesn't, you know, we're not subject to sort of plowing driveways or worrying about, you know. So it's nice. It's in the town. You could walk to the town, but it's always, having lived in small places and apartments, it's actually like, for me, living a little bit in the country. There's a little bit which is kind of the influence of my past career on my current career, which is that, you know, being a criminal lawyer, you end up being somewhat of a storyteller. And I tried a lot of cases, and when you're in front of a jury, you are trying to create your own narrative from whatever facts are at your disposal. But one of the main things you do is that you are often more interested in sort of keeping out evidence than you are in putting in evidence. So you're always objecting. The prosecutor wants to sort of put in all this damning evidence, and you're always trying to essentially restrict the information that they can put in front of a jury, your client's past record, some hearsay statement that someone made, I mean, a bad identification, an illegal search and seizure. So there are things which probably for the, you know, normal person logically would be relevant or some indication of guilt, but your job is to restrict a lot of that information. And so essentially it's very much a process of editing, which I found to be also the case in taking photographs, that you're sort of, I create these big scenes and I end up doing a lot of cropping. I sort of want to keep in what I want to keep in, but I'm also interested in what's not relevant. In the same way, when I used to do these very large charcoal drawings, I would put, you know, a 5-foot piece of paper on the wall. I just tack it up to the wall, usually in charcoal, and I would just begin to draw, you know, and at some point I would stop, or sometimes I realized I'd gone over what I wanted, and I would then crop the image. So the kind of editing was just, you kind of edit these stories to create the story that you want. So that sort of is, you know, and then the other part of it is that almost all of this work, I mean, the houses are somewhat different, but almost all of the work is narrative in some way. You know, the figures, there are different figures in this, and some are clear, and some are milky and ghostly, and some of them are painted. But, you know, you put out these figures, and everybody, you know, has their own story. So, you know, and the more successful pieces people come back to, and they think about, or they kind of make up their own stories, sort of what's going on, what are the women doing here. The houses are somewhat different. They were more collages and abstractions. They're painted. They were, some people see them as favelas, some people see them as shtetls, or, you know, you can sort of see them in any way that you want. But they also dealt with sort of color and shape and So that was another interest that...
And in some cases, you're using found materials for those.
Yeah, I mean, I find, you know, some of them I find old barnwood or driftwood to use to build some of these houses, but most of them are just built with, done with cardboard. And when you sort of peel, when you wet it and you sort of peel the surface off the cardboard, it's corrugated. So these houses all look, or very much some of them, like these corrugated structures or corrugated roofs. So they have their own, you know, and you can tear them in different ways or, you know, score them. So the cardboard has, ends up being a fairly malleable medium. You know? And you can create all kinds of structures. I basically live with a glue gun, which is sort of what I use for all this. So that's how I sort of developed this thing with the houses. First wanting to create a neighborhood for these people, but then they took on a different life, and so I just continued making houses as well. Well, but in some ways, you know, the thing about the show was, you know, I kind of initially worried, is it serious enough? Is it sort of obscure enough the way, you know, much art is these days? Is it formally interesting? I mean, I look at a lot of art. I'm interested. My tastes are pretty eclectic. I see a lot of stuff in New York. So this one, however, was kind of, I mean, most of the other stuff I do is heavier. It's sort of more serious. It seems more ponderous in some way. I mean, the paintings I do, and certainly all these large charcoal drawings, were very dark. So this show sort of ended up being somewhat more whimsical.
What medium did you use for painting?
Painted in oils. I never knew how to paint. I used to go down to Pearl Paint, which no longer exists on Canal Street. And everybody who works at Pearl Paint is a young artist. So I would go there and I would ask, well, how do I gesso a canvas? And, you know, and people there would say, well, get this canvas and here's what you need and here are the brushes and here are the different... So I kind of learned quite a bit about painting from people who worked at Pearl Paint. That was a sort of one of the places that I...
But then you also went to the studio school.
I went to the studio school for, I guess, afternoons for a year. The studio school is sort of a strange but interesting place because they don't teach you any skills. I mean, I didn't know how to really use charcoal in a particular way, or I had no idea how to paint or gesso canvas, and they didn't tell you any of that. They simply set up a model to draw from or to paint from, and you did it, and you kind of made your way, and people would come in once or twice a week and give you a critique. So it was more interesting sort of seeing other people working. And here's the thing, there are two things that I learned. When I first started, I thought, oh, somebody could draw beautiful representational piece. They could draw a figure beautifully. They could do this. And that's what I wanted to do. I could draw. But then I realized that there was something much more interesting going on, which was the people who didn't have that same kind of technical facility weren't sort of enslaved to it. And they simply had to figure out other ways to work and to sort of represent things. And that was more interesting. As you see, like, a lot of these great abstract painters and abstract expressionists and Picasso and de Kooning, they could all paint like angels. I mean, they could draw. They could draw beautifully, but at some point they decided that they needed to sort of move on from that to something else and develop another means. So that was very interesting, even just seeing these students doing this. And the other thing is I learned something about painting, because I didn't know anything about painting, because somebody once said to do a drawing, they just did a sort of setup of flowers and vases, and you had a big 5-foot piece of paper, and they said, well, just draw a 1-inch, you know, just look at like a 1-inch or 5-inch sort of strip across your paper, and, you know, your field of vision. So you're not drawing a vase, you're simply drawing this sort of piece of a vase, and you go across, and what you end up drawing is simply a series of sort of shapes and tones one next to the other. And if you do enough of these lines, they actually end up creating the entire thing. But what I realized, which probably most people knew before this, was that this was how people painted. I mean, you put one piece of color, tone, whatever, next to another, as opposed to simply drawing a figure, or you simply saw how much painting worked, which was that even representational painting basically was abstract. You were simply putting one piece of paint next to the other to sort of, in the end, create whatever image. So those were the sort of two things that I learned from that experience. And then occasionally I would simply, because I love to draw, I would find, not a drawing class, but you would go somewhere. There was a place in New York, I think it's still there, called the Spring Street Studio, and they would have models three times a day, 9 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 5 o'clock, or whatever, you know, and they would be a three-hour session where you'd have a nude, and you'd pay $8, and you'd sit down, and they would just do a series of poses for 3 hours, and I just, you know, utterly adored that, and so whenever I could find that, I would go and just draw, which I haven't done in years, but I'd probably love to go back and do again. I don't know if I'd started out as an artist at 22, whether I would have continued to be an artist. There was something about sort of coming to it much later in life that, you know, in some ways allowed me to do it. And I had looked at a lot of art, and I had other life experiences and stories to tell, which I don't think I would have done at a younger age. I would have done this for a few years and moved on to something else. But still, I mean, when I started to do this, I said, I don't want to do this as an avocation. I want to do this as a vocation. And I, you know, there's a lot of this that, you know, I really wanted always to have a gallery and a place to show my work because, you know, it's kind of a conversation. You want people to come, you want people to respond, however they respond. I don't care if it's critical. I mean, I'm more interested usually in the criticism because it sort of allows me to think a lot more about the work. But I find that, I mean, I'm not sure that if I didn't have a gallery that I, whatever my circumstances were, that I would have kept doing this. You know, I never wanted to simply do it by myself in the studio or be a Sunday painter. You know, I wanted it to be a vocation. I wanted to sell pieces. I wanted people to see the pieces and talk about them or write about them, because that's what made this interesting. So it's kind of about the making, but it is very much for me about the showing and to some extent about the selling. It's all a part of it. So I never feel like I've retired. I sort of often take umbrage if anybody says that. I feel like this is my work and this is what I do every day. And I, you know, I put out a lot of work and I'm fairly productive, and there's all different kinds of work, but, you know, and I hope people are interested or respond to it, but that's kind of how I approach it, you know, as a job, someplace I should be every day, you know. So I go home, when I take photographs, I'll take 100 photographs in a day, and I'll go home and spend hours at night just going through them on the computer to see if I, you know, if I find one image in the course of those 100, I think it's been a very successful day. Or if I find 3 images or 2 images in the course of a week, no matter how many photographs I've taken, I'm pleased with it, that I can work with that. But there's a lot of sort of serendipity. And a lot of my opportunities to show work and do things have been that as well, in the way that I sort of found this photography gallery found me. It was, you know, there was a serendipity and some degree of luck. So I've sort of been fortunate with all that. Anyway, and then I've been looking for another project, and I don't really know what it is, whether it's a series of photographs or drawings, or, I mean, I have an idea. I have the model of this theater, which I'd kind of like to bring up to Great Barrington and rebuild in the garage behind the house. It's probably 5 feet long by 4 feet wide, something like that, and a couple of feet high, and shows movies. And I'm trying to figure out if there's a way that I could recreate this and then actually have seats and make this into a sort of little theater viewing space, sort of a trompe l'oeil space. I'm not sure that I could do it, but I thought it would be interesting to convert this garage for some period of time into a little theater gallery and see what, you know, so there, it's kind of one of many things. I mean, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, it's not like I'm just a painter, so I sort of have another project where I'm working on the same thing, or I'm a photographer who does landscape work, and I continue to do that. Kind of after each show, I'm trying to figure out what's next. You know, I probably had like seven solo shows of different kinds. A number of drawing shows, a number of painting shows, and then a number of photography shows, and this amalgam of work. I always produce the work with the idea of showing it in some fashion. I produce some of it with the idea of photographing it, and there are a few photographs of these houses, some shot from above with afternoon light. I haven't yet figured out whether the men or these figures could be a subject of a photograph. So some of them are I began with the idea in the models, with the idea of photographing them. But very often, the photograph is more interesting than the model, or the model is more interesting than the photograph. They're not necessarily both interesting pieces. So I don't really know exactly where it's going to end up. But when Bruce gave me this opportunity, I thought, well, let's see what I can put together. And I know that some of the elements in the show probably don't particularly work with other elements, but there was this opportunity that we had some more paintings, but we edited it down to one, and I had a whole series of drawings, and we limited that to two, and, you know, in part because that's what Bruce wanted, but it's also because Bruce is a really sort of great editor and curator. So I find that sort of listening to him and following his taste, and he also does a terrific job at sort of hanging a show and thinking about it, and so I found that he was almost always correct in what to keep in and what to keep out. So that's kind of how it came about.
Well, thank you very much for being interviewed.
Well, thank you very much. It was totally fascinating to sit and talk to you, because I don't usually sit and actually talk about the work in that way. So I very much appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Thank you. Thank you.